It's not about proving you can do it once.
The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
It's about showing you can do it again.
Three ball, why not? Cash Money Middleton. And Giannis down the lane in a man slam.
It's Holiday. Floats it off the window and good.
Let's talk Bucks.
We're going to listen to whatever, you know, Bud wants us to do, and we're going to go out there and compete.
Game recaps, analysis, and previewing every second of playoff basketball for the reigning champs. This is Bucks at 6 with Alex Stroth on ESPN Wisconsin and streaming on Wisconsin On Demand.
Well, that was ugly. Bucks fall in game two. This series is tied. We're heading back to Fiserv Forum. Only after, what do we got? Godsmack at the Fiserv Forum on Friday? 3-day layoff for the Bucks and Celtics. But you could look at that as a positive or negative. We'll dive into that. Here on Bucks at 6:01 across ESPN Wisconsin. 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. 100.5 ESPN Madison. Alex Stroth. Hanging out with you, Chris Larson helping out running the show here on ESPN Wisconsin. A lot to get into, man. Where are you at? What are you feeling? You just kind of like, it is what it is. Let us know, 800-990-3776. That is the First Midwest Bank talk and text line in your way in to the show. Are you concerned? Are you feeling fine? It is what it is. Or, oh no, this is bad. This ain't good. We needed both of them. How are you feeling? Let us know. 800-990-3776. We will get into some of your responses later. Again, that's the First Midwest Bank talking text line. First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank. Well, I think the big takeaway from last night's loss for the Bucks is this. When the Bucks lose, they lose big. And this isn't something new we've learned about the team by any means, right? I mean, this is how it's been. I look at last year's playoff run, which, by the way, ended with a Larry O'Brien trophy and a couple of nice rings. The Bucks lost 7 times. And in only 3 of those 7, less than 50%, the Bucks lost by less than 10 points. So that means in 4 of those 7 losses, they lost by double digits. So this is nothing new about the Bucks, right? When they lose, they likely lose big. It's just how it's been for the last several years. And it's something we can live with, right? It's just one game. The Bucks did what they had to do in Boston. Steal one game. Get home court advantage. And they did that early. They won game one, which was great. Great game this weekend, by the way. The Bucks looked awesome. Not so much last night. But you stole one game. You're in a really good spot. 1-1. Bring it back to Fiserv this weekend for games 3 and 4. Win both of those. You're up 3-1 going back to Boston. You got to be feeling pretty good about where you're at. So a couple issues, though, from last night. Jaylen Brown going bananas in the first half, obviously an issue. But I think, you know, I really focused on the three-point attempts because Justin Garcia, who you hear on the Milwaukee Bucks radio network as well as Bucks Talk after every Bucks game on these stations, mentioned that this was the first time in a playoff game, an NBA playoff game, since 1994, that a team made 3 or less three-point shots. Back in 1994, I forgot which team it was, only made 1. But this is the first time it's happened in almost 30 years, 28 years, since a team has made 3 or less three-point field goals in a playoff game. So yeah, that makes sense why you lose as big as you did last night. You only make 3 threes. It's not going to help your case. It's why you lose by 23 points. But it almost seemed like Milwaukee, and this is a credit as well to Boston's defense, but Milwaukee got out of their normal rhythm offensively, right? During the regular season, they averaged 38 three-point attempts. During the postseason, they have averaged 36 three-point attempts per game. So that mid to high 30 three-point attempts per game is typically where Milwaukee lands. Only took 18 last night. And again, that's a credit to Boston's terrific defense. We've talked all year long, or all series and all postseason long, about how good Boston is defensively. We didn't see it a ton in the first game, but it really came out in game two, even without the defensive player of the year, Marcus Smart. They looked awesome. So all credit to them. But the Bucks only shooting 18 threes is an issue. They dominated in the paint, but that's because, well, Boston made what? 20 threes last night? more than that. They took 50 of them, I think. They made 50, just about 50% of them.
Yeah, they outscored. Right? They outscored the Bucks 60-9 from the 3-point line.
Whoa! I didn't realize it was that big of a gap, Chris. 51-point differential from outside the arc. That's insane. That's nuts. And, you know, we knew there was going to be a game in this series. We knew it, right? It's something we had accepted prior to the series even starting. There was going to be a game where the Celtics came out and they were just on fire from outside. This was that game. But Milwaukee was as ice cold as it gets. It was the least amount of 3-point field goals made in a playoff game in 28 years. That's longer than I've been on this earth, Chris. That's insane to me. And it is what it is, right? The game's over with. You're tied. You still have home court advantage. So things are still looking up, right? I'm bringing the power of positivity today because the playoffs are a long haul. It's a long battle. And that's just what it is. So one loss doesn't make or break anything. But it's still, it was just over before it began. And credit to Mike Budenholzer because early in that first quarter, you start the game 1 of 10 shooting. And Boston, it seemed to me, and I know this isn't true, but it seemed to me like they made their first 25 shots. They just could not miss in that first quarter. But Mike Budenholzer was willing to try a lot of new things, right? He threw out a 4-guard set when things were just not going the Bucks' way. And that 4-guard set we've seen quite a bit this postseason. And it slowed things down a little bit, and they were trying to shoot threes, but it was just all a flat failure last
week. Yeah, they got down 18-3 and pretty much never recovered after that. I think they got within 13, I think, with about like 5 minutes to go before Boston pretty much put it away and scored the pretty much the final points of the games. But they only had 18 3-point attempts, which I think are like the fewest, by far the fewest in the Mike Budenholzer era in Milwaukee, because Boston, they changed up their game plan defensively. They took away the 3-ball that Milwaukee lives on. Rather than doubling Giannis, they decided to play him straight up with Grant Williams and Al Horford to try to test him to take him one-on-one, and they were largely successful. I mean, Giannis shot 11 of 27 from the field. So without having to devote that extra resource to him, the Celtics are able to stay home on the shooters. And without Chris Middleton, the Bucks don't have the kind of shot creators to find their preferred looks that they want.
Yeah, Chris, to your point, I think this was the first game in the postseason since game 2, of course, of the Chicago series that the Bucks really missed Chris Middleton. And That's no shot at Chris, right? Obviously, we'll take him every game of the week. He's your second best option offensively, likely. But this was the first game where it felt like, yeah, could have used him there, or could have used him there, could have used him there defensively, right? Chris Middleton was missed in this game. And that's the only part, Chris, that worries me the rest of the series, right? Is that we're going to have another game in which, oh man, we could have used Chris Middleton there. Because I feel like through the, what would it be, 4 games without Chris Middleton prior to last night's, I never really thought like we missed him, right? You had the Grayson Allen coming out party in Chicago, those 2 games afterwards. Pat Connaughton has had some really solid games. Brooke Lopez had a really nice series against Chicago. But as you just said, Chris, they changed up the game plan defensively. I think he shot the ball, and yeah, I'm looking at the box score. He shot the ball twice, just 2 times last night. You can't have that, right? You need Brooke Lopez, whether that be outside or posting up in the paint. Either or, you need Brooke Lopez shooting the ball more than twice. I think Wesley Matthews shot it 3 or 4 times, right? So you want to see a little bit more diversity, at least in terms of shot selection, from Milwaukee's offense than what you saw in game 2. But this is a game where I'm okay saying, all right, let's just throw it down the memory hole. Let's forget about it. It's 1-1. This series is still tied. Let's not overreact. It is what it is. And let's move on. I do want to hear from Pat Connaughton, because I think he summed it up really nice. And he's essentially just explained, look, I mean, it's 1 game. The playoffs are long. We could have 5 more games in this series, essentially. So Pat Connaughton here on the playoffs overall.
You're not going to skate through the playoffs unscathed. How do you learn not just from losses but from wins? And when we take that mentality and we make sure that we have each other's back, we stick together and understand that there's going to be adversity throughout the playoffs. It's not something we shouldn't expect. We actually expect it and we want to embrace it.
Yeah, that Bucks guard, Pat Connaughton there, after he was the only guy that really provided off the bench last night, at least offensively again, right? I mean, He finished with 13 points, shot 6 of 7 overall, so solid offensive performance from Pat Connaughton, but only shooting 2 threes. Grayson Allen only shot 1, and I mean, we can just run down the box score. They only took 18 3-points. That's just not acceptable. When you're averaging double that so far in the postseason, minus last night, they were averaging 36 3-point attempts per game, only taking 18 last night. And I realized the game plan fell apart. Let's memory hole it. Let's forget about it. I think that's a Boston accent, at least my attempt at one. So we'll move on from this. It's over with. It's done with. That's game two. It's in the books. It is what it is. I'm over it. I mean, that's really how I view it. It's that early in the series. The Bucks got the job done. They accomplished what they needed to in Boston. Steal a game, you have home court advantage. Congratulations. You had that right when the series started. So now you bring it back to Milwaukee. And the fascinating stat that Justin Garcia, again, the studio host of the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network, as well as host of Bucks Talk after every Bucks game here on these stations, he keeps noting, in all 10 series that Mike Budenholzer has been the coach of the Milwaukee Bucks in the playoffs, the winner of Game 3 has won the series, 10 for 10. So, if you believe in superstition, and that statistic, take it for what it's worth, Saturday's game is really important. Obviously because it gives you a lead in the series, but also because of that fun statistic. I don't know how much stock you can put into it. I'll put a little into it. I think it's a fun stat. So winner of Game 3 wins the series. We'll see what happens. But Game 3 at Fiserv Forum on Saturday. 3 days of layoff because of a Godsmack concert. At Fiserv Forum. Chris, you going to see Godsmack on Friday?
I'm not going to see Godsmack, no. No, I didn't even know they were still touring or basically playing shows. I haven't heard about them since like 1989.
Yeah, they've been around forever, right? Like, my dad partied to them, I think, back in the day. And I actually saw them a few years ago. They're still pretty solid. I just think it's fascinating. They've been touring for over 30 years. So now the NBA playoffs are going to change their schedule a little bit because of a scheduling conflict at Fiserv Forum. Godsmack. Ben Brust is going to join us next segment. He's going to a concert tomorrow. I'm going to try to convince him to make it 2 in a row. I want him to see Godsmack on Friday before calling Saturday's Game 3. Ben Brust joins us next. It's Bucks at 6 here on ESPN Wisconsin.
You're listening to Bucks at 6 on ESPN Wisconsin and streaming on WisconsinOnDemand.com.
Oh, yeah, a little Godsmack brings us in. It's Bucks at 6 across ESPN Wisconsin. Alex Strope hanging out with you until 7 o'clock tonight as we continue to break down. I can't take this seriously. As we continue to break down the Bucks' Game 2 loss to the Boston Celtics last night at TD Garden in Boston. It was an ugly one. We bring in the reinforcements now. You hear him on the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network as an analyst. You also hear him before the show on these very stations, a part of Scalzo and Brust. It is the great Ben Brust. Benny, I know you're going to a concert next door to where I am right now tomorrow. You're seeing Ben Rector at the Sylvie. I hear the Bucks game got pushed back to Saturday because Godsmack is at Fiserv Forum. Is there any chance you will be attending that one as well?
I can confirm with 100% certainty that I will not be there. I have some plans on Friday on my day off. I'm going to get a pedicure at 11 o'clock.
No way.
And then I have a guarding against cancer event since I can't be at the Saturday signature event that is at the Kohl Center.
Okay, so you're getting... All right. There's so much to unpack. I mean, I want to ask you why when the Bucks lose, they tend to lose big, or why they only shot 18 threes last night. But now I'm fixated on the pedicure, Benny. I know you've talked about this before, but I don't know that I'm fully informed. How often do you get a pedicure? Is this like a regular thing?
Yes. So I'm going with my old roommate, Brittany, who's been mentioned on Skeletal and Breast many times. She's a saint. We call it a girl's day. Where we go together and we, you know, I swear to you, I'll show you the text. I think it speaks for itself, Strofe. I'm going to have a girl's day on Friday.
I'm sweating because I'm trying to hold back. So hold on. So you're taking 2 days off this week. One to go to a Ben Rector concert, and number two to have a girl's day so you can get a pedicure? Are you serious? This has to be a bit. This is a joke, right?
No, those are my plans for my 2 days off work. But I'm going to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. I'm going to drink some margaritas. I'm going to go to the Ben Rector concert, drink a ton of Bud Light. And then I'm going to go on Friday. We have 11 o'clock pedicure, so I'm going to be hungover and not want to move, which will be fine. I won't move until the pedicure. Get some lunch, have some mimosas. No, I'll have a screwdriver. And then, yeah, I got an event for Guarding Against Cancer. So I'm booked solid, man.
Wow. That is Ben Brust, the unbelievable Ben Brust. I say unbelievable not because I respect you, Ben. I say unbelievable because of what you just told me. I'm a little blown. I'm taken aback here. I'm blown away. So
I tend to do that, Trophy.
Yeah, you do have that power on people. All right, let's talk basketball because I can't talk about pedicures anymore. Why is it when the Bucks lose, they just tend to lose huge, right? I threw out the stat earlier in the playoffs of their 7 losses last year. 4 of them were double digits or more. Last night, they could never really get back into it. They made a push there towards the end of the game, but it was too little too late at that point. What is it about losing and losing big with the Milwaukee Bucks?
I mean, look, they're competitors, and you know, I think they did obviously have the intentions of going and winning that game. But there's a game within the game, and I think you were sort of hinting at this a little bit of a 7-game series and how long it is. And I just think about after 2 games of the first series, that's when Giannis really figured out what to do against the Bulls. And I kind of think the same thing here. Chris Larson very astutely pointed out that Grant Williams and Al Horford were guarding Giannis one-on-one, so the rest of the team didn't help off shooters and really cut off those direct pass shots, even to like Bobby Portis couldn't get into rhythm for 3. So from game 1 to game 2, the strategy shifted. Game 1, the Celts guarded Giannis the same way that the Bulls did. And guess who found how to have success against the double team? Mr. Giannis. And so now it's a little bit of a recalibration, right? You know, if I'm be guarded one-on-one, I shouldn't go back to the basket with Grant Williams or Al Horford. It should be ball screen at the 5, roll, have Grayson and Drew create offense downhill. If Giannis has it, he has to continue to go downhill and not be scared of charges, because the back to the basket against those 2 physical defenders one-on-one just isn't going to work. So he showed he was going way more downhill in the second half, way more aggressive, got to the free throw line, finished with some and-one. So their defense played a little bit better in spurts in the second half. Obviously, Jaylen Brown, you can't prepare for a 9 out of 10 outburst. So I'm still optimistic as can be with where this team is at.
Yeah, Ben, we talked about it a bit last week, but I mean, we knew there was going to be a game at some point, right, where the Celtics just went bananas from 3. And I think, you know, it seemed like the Bulls did that as well last series in game 2. So it's just, I feel less confident saying this about the Celtics like I did the Bulls, but it's really hard to replicate a performance from outside like they had last night. Do you feel the same way?
No, and I know you want me to bring nuggets to the show, and you found out that the 51-point differential from the 3-point line in game 2 of the Boston Bucks game yesterday was pretty astounding. But the last time, according to Joe and Key Wascom, that the differential was larger than that in the playoff game was when the Golden State Warriors played the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Eastern Conference Finals. There was a 54-point differential. So, yeah, not great when your differential is 51 points from 3. And as you mentioned, the attempts were half of what the Bucks normally attempt. Again, you accomplished a win on the road in game 1. You head home, and think about this. A year ago, people were saying, down 0-2 to the Nets, who's going to be our next head coach? Now the situation is tied 1-1 to the young and rising Celtics. Can we hold home court? I trust that the coaching staff, Coach Bud being through this as an assistant, having 4 rings with the Spurs, 1 as a head coach, will be able to calibrate a game plan to get Giannis efficient against the Celtics in game 3.
So far we've talked about pedicures, Ben Rector concerts and Joe from Key Wascom stats, which, Ben, that is an accurate stat because I was also watching SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt last night, and that's where that one was shown. So shout out to Joe from Key Wascom there. Why does this team, you know, it's every series, right? It seems, as you mentioned earlier with Giannis, he kind of figures it out after two games. Games 3 and 4 seem to be Mike Budenholzer's strong suit. That was the case last year, and even years prior. Just seems like the games 3 and 4 is really where they fall into a rhythm and start to figure teams out. I imagine they will shoot more than 18 threes on Saturday then.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, you adjust game by game to what the team is throwing at you. And ultimately, sometimes it's a simple game, and Coach Bud would be the first to say it. Either make shots or you don't. And someone famously told me, as a coach, when someone shoots a three-point shot, good coach, bad coach, good coach, bad coach, it goes in, good coach. You know, like sometimes it's just the players that you have and the ability for them to make plays in the positions that you put them in. And again, that's where, for me, it all comes back to the experience that this team has together as a core. Greg Scalzo made this point that I actually found really interesting. Because it's something to think about. The Celtics have young stars in Tatum and Brown. They are almost going through that learning curve right now of facing adversity, trying to win a playoff series against the world champions. The Bucks went through this as well. I mean, they just did. The adversity from the bubble, the adversity from coming down 0-2 against the Nets, the adversity against the Suns going down 0-2, the adversity of closing out the Hawks without Giannis. The Bucks have done this all. So Jaylen Brown, is his right hamstring that he's grabbing in the second half, is that going to affect him in a 7-game series? The Bucks have just been through it, and I know you played Pat Connaughton's sound before I joined you, and it was just spot on. It was like they're prepared already for the adversity because they've been through it. You can't prepare for adversity you haven't seen unless you've been through it. And the Boston Celtics are going to be going through that during the season, and that's where I give the Bucks the mental edge of what they went through last year, getting it done, becoming world champions.
Avid listener of the program, as well as former Summer League teammate of Giannis Antetokounmpo, Ben Brust with us here on Bucks at 6. I asked you after game 2 of the Chicago series, Ben, who you would like to see step up offensively. I'm going to answer for you and ask specifically about Brook Lopez, because he's taken only 9 shots so far through 2 games in this series, which is the least of any starter for Milwaukee. Obviously, it's a matchup thing, right? I think that's very evident when you watch the game. But how do you suspect he can step up offensively? Because what we saw to him in the first 2 games against Chicago is certainly some of the output I'd like to see here moving forward against Boston.
Yeah, I thought Brook played really well around the rim. You know, he was able to hit his push floaters, his 1-2 sort of turnaround fadeaway. Like, he found a rhythm offensively. And prior to the series against the Bulls, his season high heading into the playoffs was against the Bulls. So Brook had the Bulls mark. Now, where I think Brook can be effective in a series like this is if they're going to continue to guard Giannis one-on-one. Naturally, if Robert Williams is guarding a Brook Lopez, guess what Robert Williams has been trained to do? He's been trained to sit in the paint and try and help and block shots. Yeah. So if they're going to, you know, really try and go one-on-one and Brook is going to be out there, Brook has to be able to space the floor and knock down threes. And again, he's shown the ability to score around the rim, and he's shown the ability to knock down shots. I mean, that's where I think Brook can be of best value, is spacing the floor and knocking down some open threes, which will ultimately help open up the lane for Giannis by drawing a bigger defender like a Robert Williams or an Al Horford if he's on him, and Grant Williams is on Giannis. So that's how I think he could be most effective in the series.
Fair enough. Ben, I heard you talking earlier on Scalzo and Brust, but you can hear 4 to 6 p.m. on these stations if you're listening to us right now. And, you know, you have the same problem as me, it seems, whereas we like to be overconfident for Wisconsin sports teams, and then they go out and poop the bed, kind of like the Bucks did last night. So can you just say right now that the Celtics are going to win game 3 so the Bucks do, please?
See, I feel like that magic only works from 4 to 6. Because I've been right on Bucks at Six with you about who needed to step up, and I said Bobby Portis, and guess who stepped up? BP.
That's true. So should you say the Bucks are going to win game three?
If you want me to tell you who's going to step up or what's going to happen, I feel like I got a good track record on Bucks at Six, not so much 4-6 on Scalzo and Brust.
All right, so who's going to step up, Ben?
Giannis. Crazy as it sounds, Giannis has never let us down. Giannis is not, hear me out, I know he had a triple-double. He was 9 of 25 from the field, 11 of 27. He has yet to be efficient going to the rim. He is going to put up 40 in one of these next two games at Fiserv Forum.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't foul out because of all the charges called on him. But I would like to see that as well. Ben, enjoy your couple days off and your pedicure. We will talk again next week.
Yeah, I didn't know that commentators could call more charges on the referees until Stan Van Gundy was on the call yesterday.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. He was not thrilled. That's Ben Brust. You can hear him 4-6 every day on these stations on Scalzo and Brust. You can also hear him on the Milwaukee Bucks radio network alongside Dave Kane. Saturday you'll hear him, and hopefully his track record continues to be great, and Giannis can turn it around at home, at least offensively, on Saturday. We will go around the NBA next, because I just have so many thoughts on that Memphis and Golden State game from last night. We had blood, we had middle fingers, we had Ja Morant doing just insane things as a 22-year-old guy. We'll get into all that next as we go around the NBA. This is Bucks at Six on ESPN Wisconsin.
This is Bucks at Six on ESPN Wisconsin and streaming on WisconsinOnDemand.com.
Yeah, Bucks at Six, rolling on your Wednesday, all the way until 7 o'clock. Alex Strofe, Chris Larson, hanging out with you from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All studios at Radio City in Milwaukee, as well as the Park Bank ESPN Madison studios in Madison. And we'll continue to break down this Bucks loss to the Celtics last night. Although I've said, I'm memory-holing it. That one just doesn't matter, right? Like, it's 1-1. Bucks still have home court advantage. It's one game. When they lose big, it seems, most of the time. Not the end of the world, right? 8-3-1 chimes in on the First Midwest Bank text line, 800-990-3776. First Midwest Bank, a division of Old National Bank, says Bucks still rolling Celtics in five. Now, I said I'm bringing the power of positivity today. I don't know that I'm that positive, but 831 Santa Cruz, California. Appreciate you listening. Bucks still rolling Celtics in five. That's real positive. I think Bucks in six or seven, but, game two is not going to happen again. I'll tell you that much. I just don't see, the Bucks losing the way they did last night, once again in the series. It actually reminded me, I thought we were in the twilight zone, right? It's like I got hit with deja vu. Game two in the Eastern Conference semifinals last year, the Bucks played the Brooklyn Nets and lost by 39 points. They only made 8 3-point shots, and they ended up to go on to win four of the next five games in that series. And it just so happens, right? They scored almost about the same amount of points in those two games. So a little deja vu. But if deja vu is happening, we know what happened last year in the playoffs for the Milwaukee Bucks. They hoisted that Larry O'Brien trophy. It is time now to go around the NBA. Chris Larson pulls some of the top headlines from around the league. He throws them at me. I react. He reacts. And maybe we overreact a little bit, but I imagine we'll be talking a lot of Warriors-Grizzlies, because there's about six different things to hit on from that game. At this point, I say, boom, shakalaka.
And I say, he's on fire. And what was on fire last night was the violence between the Grizz and the Warriors in Game 2. That was the only other game besides the Bucks-Celtics game last night in the NBA playoffs. The Grizz went on to win the game thanks to Ja Morant's big performance. But the violence in the game between the two teams was the overshadowed maybe the performance of Ja Morant. The game was violent. Dylan Brooks, put Gary Payton II in harm's way on a flagrant foul that was made a level 2, removed him from the game. 3 minutes in. Draymond Green, Steph Curry, both are bleeding at one point. Green needed stitches to be able to return to the game. It had a feel of like a heavyweight fight at times, or you know, or a no-hold-barred wrestling match, if you want to go Memphis style there, as they're out they were down in Memphis. But between the blood and the roar, and Green departed to get medical attention. He flipped the double birds a la Stone Cold Steve Austin. The energy was just out of control in the arena, and that was actually the second straight game where the teams kind of got a little bit chippy there. You know, Draymond Green had that first flagrant foul in game one that maybe he didn't think maybe was, but maybe reputation precedes himself, and that's why maybe he picked up that flagrant two in that game. But wall-to-wall, violent game last night between the Grizz and the Warriors. And I'm just wondering if both teams are going to think that they can maybe come out healthy out of this series after it goes down. So we'll have to see what goes on the rest of the way with those two teams there. So,
yeah, it's totally, Chris. I you know, it was funny. I was sitting on the couch last night watching that game, and I had seen a clip from Leo Chanel, who played linebacker at the University of Wisconsin, was drafted to the Kansas City Chiefs over the weekend in the NFL draft. And he was asked yesterday, you know, what do you bring to the Chiefs? And simply his answer was this:
violence and physicality.
Violence and physicality, right? And that, and I thought to myself, wow, that's fitting. I'm watching that right now because look what's on the television. You called Draymond Green Stone Cold Steve Austin. You used some wrestling comparisons. So I'll follow suit with you on that, Chris, right? Draymond Green is the perfect heel for the NBA, right? He's the perfect bad guy. He's the perfect villain. Because after he takes a shot to the face and is bleeding everywhere, he walks off the court and flips not one, but the double bird to the fans in Memphis. It was beautiful. That shot at Gary Payton was dirty. And that's what Steve Kerr called it, right? And he didn't parse words after the game. He was right. It was dirty. I don't think that was a clean shot at all. You don't take a shot at somebody's head full speed like he did, and now he left with an elbow injury. So it was all messy. And, you know, I'll say this. I mean, physicality and violence, as we just heard from Leo Chanel, it makes a game fun. But also, to your point, it makes me a little worried that these teams are going to be healthy moving on to the next round. I think, you know, the winner of this series very well could represent the Western Conference, although Phoenix looks really, really good as they play game two against Dallas tonight. But it got almost a little too chippy. I don't know that that exists. You know, like hockey, right? As I'm watching the NHL playoffs right now, when there's fights there, we like the chippiness. We like the violence. We like the physicality. But it was almost to a point last night in that game between Golden State and Memphis, Chris, where I was like, that almost seems a little overboard. But I love the intensity. I love how into it. And I love the rivalry we're kind of getting between, almost a rivalry feel between two teams that don't have a rivalry at all. It does make for fun television, I'll say that much.
Yeah, I still don't understand the tit-for-tat following. I mean, this isn't baseball, where the unwritten rules of baseball is where you plunk a guy and then you're allowed to, you know, plunk the next guy on the other team. This is sort of like a tit-for-tat type thing where one person commits a hard foul on somebody, so okay, now I'm able to commit a hard foul on somebody. I mean, where does it stop? You just keep going back and forth. You know, where does it end? Type of thing. So
yeah, it's the anything you can do, I can do better.
Exactly.
Trait, right?
Right.
And it's a little much, but I'm excited to see, because as we talked about last segment with Ben Brust, the playoffs are so long, right? Like, this series is tied now, and it could go 5, 6, 7 games at minimum, right? I mean, it's going to be a minimum of 5 games. We could go, and likely will go, 6 or 7 games. We're only through 2 games, and that's what we got presented with. We got blood running down Draymond's face as he flips a double bird to the crowd in Memphis. We've got Steve Kerr saying players from Memphis crossed the invisible line, and it was dirty. Like, I wonder where we go from here. Do we cool the jets a little bit, or does the intensity just keep rising like we expect it to? So I'm afraid they're not going to be able to top what they did last night unless we're having a benches clearing brawl like we see occasionally in Major League Baseball. Like, the way they set the precedent in game two for the physicality of this series, I just don't know that it can be topped. But it was really, really, I mean, it was a game that went down to the wire, too. So it was just a blast. But I imagine we will, the NBA is going to step in and be like, hey, last night was too much, let's cool the jets. We'll just see if those teams actually live up to it.
The other big story to come out of that game, that was the performance of Ja Morant. His entire skill set was on display in that game. He showed elite athleticism. He might be the most athletic, might not be the best player in the NBA, but he's definitely probably the most athletic player in the NBA. He's got an underrated handle. His improved, his floater was working last night, despite everything. He was 12 of 13 from the foul line. He shot 5 of 12 from 3, scored 47 points in the game. He was unguardable pretty much in that game. It was the best performance of his young career. It came with two at a time when he needed it most. Also, Jaren Jackson Jr. fouled out. Dylan Brooks, you know, made a terrible mistake when he was removed from the game early on. Desmond Bane wasn't himself due to his back issue. So that's three of Memphis's four best players right there that they needed to win the game with, and yet Memphis still did win because Ja Morant's a member of the Grizzlies, and he put on quite the performance last night.
Yeah, so I was listening to Mike Greenberg on Greeny, who you hear from noon to two on these stations every day, and I just thought he put it so great. I don't like Ja Morant. I love Ja Morant. I have very deep feelings for Ja Morant, is the way Greeny put it earlier today. And I thought that was perfect, right? Like, this is a young guy who everybody can get behind in the NBA, right? Like, his story, going to a small college, getting drafted number two overall, which we'll get into that in a second. And now doing this, he's 22 years old and poured in 45 points last night. Chris, I'm 23 and I couldn't pour in 2 points in an NBA playoff game. I get him not as athletic and physical and gifted as Ja Morant is, but to see what he does at that stage is just unbelievable to me. 45 points lifts the Grizzlies to a game two victory. It was awesome. It was just terrific to see that play out. He is so impressive. And to my earlier point, he went number two in the draft behind Zion Williamson. I think we're ready to flip that, right? Like, we have accepted that once again in an NBA draft, the number one pick was not the number one pick. He was not the number one guy in that draft. What Ja Morant has done in these last few years has just been so terrific to see. And if I'm not mistaken, Chris, he won this year's league most improved player, did he not?
Correct,
which is
yes.
Just nuts.
Yeah, and you shortchanged him, too. He scored 47 last night, not 45.
Oh, I did.
Yes, but
I missed the final two. Yeah.
If you remember the series against the T-Wolves, he had to be more of a facilitator, creator for guys like Bane and Brandon Clark because of all the attention Morant was getting defensively. The Warriors, they didn't trap Ja until late in the game, and it's not really part of the scheme that they use either, at least not yet anyway, but they don't have the kind of player with the kind of tenacity defensively like a Patrick Beverley or like a raw athlete like Anthony Edwards to defend Morant too, so we got to see what kind of game plan they come up with going forward and later in the series here, so moving into game three.
Yeah, definitely, and I just think this series has six or seven written all over it. There's no way a team's going to rattle off three straight here. So I love it. I mean, this has my attention more of any series outside of Bucks Celtics this round. Of the other three series, this by far is the most intriguing to me. And last night was a perfect example of that because Memphis, as you said, Chris, I thought that was a perfect way to put it, stuck true to their professional wrestling route and had what you would see at a professional wrestling event, right? You got blood, you got people punching each other in the head, you got middle fingers. I mean, it was insane.
And our final story here as we go around the NBA, Tyler Hero, Wisconsin native for the Miami Heat, wins the Sixth Man of the Year award after having a bit of a slide maybe in his sophomore season last year. He's bounced back in a big way, bringing home that Sixth Man of the Year trophy and helping the Heat to a number one seed in the Eastern Conference. He received 96 of a possible 100 first place votes.
Wow.
He put up 20.7 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, and 4 assists per game, all off the bench. Played in 66 total games of 82 this season. But my question is, if you're really the sixth man and you're averaging like what, maybe the second or third most points on the team, and you're averaging the second or third most minutes on the team, are you really the sixth man? When I think sixth man, I think of like the Lou Williams type or the Jamal Crawford, the guys who come in and are like the heater off the bench, basically like the microwave type of guy who come in and pour some points in or whatever, but they don't play a lot of minutes. But when you're playing the most minutes on the team like that,
yeah,
I don't know if you can really call it the sixth man of the year.
It's an interesting point, and I see what you did there, Chris. The hero coming off the bench,
yes.
Very well done. I don't know, because I think when James Harden won it, and this would have been back, 2011, 2012, he was in a pretty similar spot, right? Like, he was just on the precipice of becoming this all-star, superstar-type guy. Right? Obviously, it was the season before he got traded to Houston. So Yeah, I understand the point, but I think the rules just dictate. If you're coming off the bench, if you're not starting, you are eligible, and that's the case here with Tyler Herro. But Wisconsin represent, right? Whitnall grad, obviously did decommit from the Badgers, so I know a lot of our Badgers fans don't have super strong feelings toward him. It's just cool to see kids from Wisconsin lighten it up in this playoffs, right? You got Jordan Poole as well, who we've talked about quite a bit for the Golden State Warriors, who's been lighting it up. So, and Wesley Matthews, of course, from the Milwaukee Bucks, a Madison guy. So to see all these guys from Wisconsin in the NBA playoffs and lighting it up and getting this time in Tyler Herro's case, the recognition of the sixth man of the year, it's just cool to see homegrown guys going off and doing big things. That's how I view it. But it's a fair question, Chris. I guess it's almost like the MVP, right? Like, how do we value MVP? Is it the best player? Is it the highest scorer? Is it the guy that makes the highest impact on his team, which almost every year for the last 20, it would have been either LeBron James or Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? So there's always an argument around these awards because Ja Morant won most improved player. Was Ja Morant really the most improved player? As much as he did improve from a year ago, we knew he was a superstar. So you can make this debate with just about every award in the league, but Tyler Herro, your sixth man of the year. I believe that does it for around the NBA. We've got two games going on tonight as well. One currently ongoing, Philadelphia in front of Miami, 18-17, early in the first quarter in that one, and a 9 o'clock tip tonight, the West Coast tip between Dallas and Phoenix, with the Suns have a 1-0 advantage in that series. So two games tonight. No games tomorrow, Chris, for the first time in several weeks. What the hell are we going to do?
That's crazy, yeah.
You got any plans?
No, I mean, and the Brewers play a day game tomorrow then, too, also. 11:45 start somewhere on there. So, yeah, it's going to be nothing's going to be going on, at least in the big sports anyway.
Yeah, no, you're right. I might need to, I mean, NHL playoffs, but I'm not a huge hockey fan. I'll turn it on maybe, but I might need to give Ben Brust a ring and say, hey man, I might just show up at that Ben Rector concert. Although I don't know if I can name a song by him. It just gives me something to do because there's no playoff basketball on tomorrow for the first time in several weeks. So I got to fill that void somehow. We will wrap up the show next. Defense is sexy. I'll tell you why. That's next. It's Bucks at 6 here on ESPN Wisconsin.
Welcome back to Bucks at 6 on ESPN Wisconsin and streaming on WisconsinOnDemand.com.
Bucks at 6, wrap it up on your Wednesday. Bucks fall in game 2 to the Boston Celtics last night. Ties this series up at one game apiece as we head back to Fiserv Forum this Saturday after Godsmack puts on a terrific show at Fiserv Forum on Friday. So my understanding, and I don't know the legitimacy behind this, I haven't read an official report, but my understanding is that game 3 would have been Friday, right? 2 days of layoff, Wednesday and tomorrow, and then back to work Friday. But as I just mentioned, Fiserv Forum already had something scheduled for Friday, and that would be a Godsmack concert, a band that's been around since like 1992, who's still touring apparently, which I didn't realize. And Chris Larson, Alex Strofe with you, as Chris mentioned earlier, you know, he didn't realize they were still touring either. And so we're going to play game 3 on Saturday. Give you plenty of rest. But what I will tell you is obviously that means for Boston, you're likely getting Marcus Smart back healthy. You know, he did not play last night. He was questionable leading up to game time, and about 90 minutes prior or 2 hours prior to tip off, it was announced that he would not play. Now he gets 3 days of rest and he will likely play Saturday. So they do get that back. But Boston, and it's been the big thing we've talked about a ton leading into the series and now at the beginning of the series, is they are the best defensive team in the league. And I think last night was another perfect example of that, right? They changed the game plan up a little bit defensively, and they limited the Bucks' main guys to not very much, right? Giannis did not shoot particularly well at all, although he did lead the team in scoring. Brook Lopez has been held to 9 shots. Not last night. The whole series, both games combined, he was held to 9 shots, which is the least of any Bucks starter. And plus a couple guys off the bench have shot more than 9 shots through 2 games. So Brook Lopez hasn't been able to get going offensively. And, you know, the list goes on. Defense has really been the storyline of this series. Both in game 1 and game 2, the losing team was held to under 90 points. Under 100 points, I guess, would even be surprising, but under 90 points. And it still creates really fun basketball. Right? I'm sick of hearing the narrative, which we don't often in the playoffs, that the NBA does not play defense, right? Because this series is a perfect example of that. And while neither of these first two games in this series have been particularly close, defense has stolen the show. So what happens when we get a shootout, which we will likely get over the course of the remainder of the series? Well, it might create for the best basketball game you've seen this entire postseason. So all I'm saying to you, I do officially declare, defense is sexy in the NBA. It really is, man. I was having a blast watching what Boston was able to do against Milwaukee last night, and same with Milwaukee to Boston in game one. Both of these teams really, really strong defensively, and that will continue to be the case throughout the remainder of this series. That'll do it for our show tonight. A big thanks to Ben Brust for joining us, and a big thanks to Chris Larson for running the show across ESPN Wisconsin. We'll be back tomorrow night and Friday at 6 o'clock right here on Bucks at 6 on ESPN Wisconsin.